everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 4 Recap here on Reality TV for Hap-Ups. Damn it, I didn't think we'd be holding funerals twice in one season, but you know what? These things tend to happen. Here we are talking about an emotional roller coaster of this week's episode of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. Before we get into it all, let me welcome in our weekly panel. Liana Boris, how are you doing?
Oh my gosh, emotional roller coaster is the best way to describe it. Because I was thinking when Latrice first got eliminated, you know, I said I sad. And today, I complicated emotions because I have lots of feelings. So I'm excited to talk about it all with the two of you.
Now, Brent Wolgamut, I did have petitions online for me to play back the clip of you saying last week that both Latrice would be gone next week and lock in Manila as the winner. I've decided not to do so, but I will mention it to sort of satisfy those people.
Well, how was I supposed to know that all of a sudden somebody was going to actually start playing the game? Like, how was I supposed to know after four seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race and three seasons of Lip Sync for Your Legacy rules? Was I supposed to know that Naomi Smalls was suddenly going to get smart and actually decide to take out the front runner? I have feelings about it, which I'll get into, but my God, I could not have seen that coming a mile away.
Yeah, this was, I mean, I'll definitely join in as well that, and I want to start off by talking about this because this is by far, in my opinion, the most shocking outcome we've had in the three seasons of this Lip Sync for Your Legacy format. It's honestly one of the most shocking eliminations I've seen on reality television in quite some time. Maybe second to, I know this has been battered around, Caitlyn failing on the puzzle in Big Brother 20 in terms of just watching something absolutely shocking happen on television. I mean, I was mimicking Trinity and Monique when that lipstick came up. I was mouth agape. And like you both, I'm feeling so complicated about it because while it does say something exciting for the competition aspect of it, it comes at the expense of someone who was doing so freaking well in the competition. So I feel like we need to start with the breaking news item of Naomi shockingly eliminating Manila from the competition at the final six here. Liana, I know you said I complicated feelings. Just give me some of those feelings. Let them spill out.
Okay, so first of all, I don't want to hate on Naomi. I can't hate on Naomi. Of course, there was like an immediate, oh my God, what did you just do? But then I remember the format of the show. And this is something that we've talked about now for a couple seasons, right? Of, oh, you have this lip sync for your legacy. So you have an opportunity if a front runner falls in the bottom two to send them home. But, you know, we've seen majority of the decisions have fallen along the lines of the person who has the best quote unquote report card stays and the person who has the worst goes home. So I can't fault Naomi for sending home Manila, but at the same time, I was like, what the hell are you doing? Like, how dare you send home Manila? She's a front runner. She's done so well. How can you send her home? But I can't fault her for sending her home because that's the game. I mean, that's what you should theoretically should do if you want to win. And that was nice to see that cutthroat attitude from Naomi. But at the same time, I mean, I didn't disagree with Brent last week when he said, I think Manila is the front runner to win because I thought she was the front runner to win. So it seems insanity that she would go like just completely insane that she would go home this week, you know, with what the final six. She was what
next to somebody who's already been eliminated and who has been in the bottom three multiple times and in the bottom two multiple times. Okay, that's what I have a problem with. Okay, so first of all, when I first watched the episode, I texted, I tweeted at Naomi Smalls and was basically like, F you. Like, F you, mother effer. Like, seriously, I was so freaking mad. And I even said in our little group chat, F her, okay? Because I was so mad. However, I get where she's coming from. It's just the thing is that I finally adapted. Like I said, four seasons now we've been doing All-Stars. I have finally adapted to the point in time where, okay, we're eliminating people based on their general report cards. Yeah, I take your point, Liana, that occasionally someone went home who maybe had a better report card than the person they were next to. But it was never the front runner. It was never Alaska. Mm-hmm. You know, it was never Chad. Not that they were doing Lip Sync for Your Legacy back then. But, I mean, the point is that nobody who I ever thought could really win the show went home until Ben did it to himself in All-Stars 3. So I finally settled into these All-Star rules. This lip sync for your legacy. The best is going to rise to the top. The best needs to beat the best. I thought the whole cast has been following Trinity's mantra of, I want to beat the best, so I want to go to the end with the best. And so it's really kind of whiplash when you get somebody who goes outside of what you thought the norm was. It's like all of a sudden Richard Hatch showed up on the show and decided to play the game. And while I'm happy that that happened, I'm like, I have complicated feelings about it, like Liana, because I'm like, I don't think that Naomi owned her shit. And by owned it, I never really heard her say, you know, I could make a big move here.
Mm-hmm.
I could take out Manila, who is by far the bigger competitor than Latrice. But she never said that. It was always hiding behind, well, you saved me last week, Latrice. So that, I'm like, I'm weighing that against the fact that this is your first time in the bottom. What do you mean you're weighing it against it? There is no weighing against it. I mean, last week, everybody, the week before, they were both going to eliminate Valentina. So, of course, when you're in the bottom two with Valentina, it's obvious they're going to send home, wait for it, Valentina. Latrice didn't really save you. It was just, that's what they've been doing the entire time. I was really bummed. Bummed is the word. That she hid behind that and never said, you know, and she looked, I wanted Naomi to look at the camera and say, you know, I can make a big move right now. Manila's the obvious front runner. And if I want to win this crown, I need to take her out. That's what I wanted her to say. And she didn't say it. I feel like the show is giving us a mishmash of, well, why did she really eliminate her? In fact, I don't really know the reason why she eliminated her. I guess she eliminated her because she thought she was the biggest competition. And spoiler alert for those of you who watched the preview for the next episode of RuPaul's Drag Race, Manila was also eliminated by Monet. So no matter who RuPaul chose, they were both going to eliminate Manila. You can see the lipstick that Monet has on the table next to her in the preview for the next episode. So it's not a spoiler. It's right out there for everybody to see. They both decided to eliminate Manila, and I just wanted them to own their shit more. So that's where I'm coming from on this, Mike.
The thing is, I do wonder, because I thought the same thing. We do have some potential in early on next episode, them sort of explaining their methodology. I do think that one of the reasons why, to your point, we don't have much rationale behind it is because they really want to go for the shock value of this elimination, to which I say they delivered. But I totally agree with you that I'm hopeful that both Naomi and Monet will say something along the lines of, you know, she was the biggest competition. Monet, in the beginning of this episode, is even going to basically speak from the audience's mouths and underline Manila and Trinity as the big two threats here. And so if she actually says, I want to, you know, take her out to give myself a better spot of winning, that's fantastic. If she cloaks it behind something like, well, you know, Latrice saved me last time, or Latrice's journey isn't over yet, I agree. That's a little wishy-washy.
That's weak sauce. That I pray to God that that's not what happens. Like, just, like, girl, we want to stan you for being a cutthroat, icy cold bitch. Let us have that. You know, I mean, I know this all took place in the past. This was like taped like a year ago, so she can't change it now. But I want her to own her shit. I pray to God that they do that, because Liana, we're going to have words if she doesn't.
Well, I think that's what's the most interesting thing to me is the fact that both of them chose Manila. In my mind, that means that there was some sort of conversation that we didn't get to see, because clearly, like, Latrice didn't save Monet at any point in time. So clearly that was not the logic. I have a feeling like there was some sort of conversation that happened, and I don't necessarily know why it wasn't included. If it did exist, this is all my conspiracy theory. I just feel like that's the case. And there has to be some other logic that we're not seeing behind it, because this decision, if you think about the structure of the game, and if you want to win, this makes sense to send home Manila. Right. And so I think the fact that we just weren't, you know, we were given some sort of weird logic. I don't know, you know, Mike, like you said, if it was about the edit of the show and trying to get the craziness of the shock value. But I don't know. There's something else here. It feels weird.
It does feel weird. I'll tell you this. The one person who did a good job of explaining what was going on was Manila. Like, Manila was actually going to both of the people in their little one-on-ones and going, hey, if you want to make a big move and take me out, then hey, go ahead. Like, I'm like, girl, what are you saying? Like, why would you say something like that? You should be beating the drum of, you know, my report card's better. Obviously, I've done better than Latrice. I've worked hard. I deserve to stay. That's what you need to say. I don't even know why she opened up her mouth about anything else. On the other hand, maybe she knew what was coming down the track and was trying to lean into the curve a little bit.
Before I get into my overall thoughts, I just want to say, on the whole, this was a fantastic piece of television. Whether you think it was good or bad, it was so emotionally wrought that I have to give kudos for producing a legitimately shocking TV moment that doesn't involve some big game-changing twist. So when this thing first happened, like you, Brent, I didn't necessarily tweet at Naomi. In fact, I think especially a couple days after the fact, you know, this fandom can be super tough when it comes to making death threats and insensitive remarks and outright racist remarks towards certain outcomes that happen. And I do implore people, don't necessarily do that. You know, it's Drag Race.
Don't do that. Yeah.
At the end of the day,
look, I just said fuck you. That's all I said. Okay. Like, I think I'm allowed to go on Twitter if I want to as an adult and tweet somebody who's on my reality show and say, you know what? Fuck you, girl. I think that's all I said. So I feel like if you want to do what I do, that's okay. If you want to tweet some death threats and racist shit, girl, bye. We don't want you.
Exactly. But I will say, you know, I was pretty pissed after this just because I became a huge Manila fan. This felt...
Yeah, you took her in the draft.
She was the very first one, and she was doing it super well. And I don't know if it was a matter of, like... I don't know if this was a matter of me feeling like it wasn't fair, or that it was too early on. I think we can certainly talk about that because I think this is going to garner some discussion over the All-Stars format. It certainly has online. But I was so furious at this outcome. But I guess the more I think about it, to your point, Brent, it does remind me all the way back 5 seasons ago when you and me and Ali Lasher talked for the very first time about RuPaul's Drag Race and speculated on this format. And we, as big Survivor and Big Brother fans, wrung our hands saying, ooh, I can't wait for one time someone's going to get rid of the front runner because they're the big threat. And now it finally happened, and I don't feel good about it. And I wonder if that's because I finally realized that taking out your competition is super fun on those types of shows, but on talent-based competition shows, it doesn't necessarily do well. Maybe it feels a little weird to me just because, you know, that's a little different than here is a show where people are being judged on their talents and placed accordingly. It feels a little weird to basically acknowledge the fact that, yes, I'm keeping somebody who is a lesser drag queen in the drag race sense, just to sort of, you know, give myself a better shot at the end, even though that attitude does play better in a show that doesn't necessarily have them, you know, doing specific talents every week. Shows like Survivor and Big Brother are just about getting to the end. Drag Race and Project Runway and Top Chef are more about, like, showing off your skills. So it feels like this was an element they tried to bring over, and while it does create fantastic drama and great TV, this result to me shows that it's kind of fitting a square peg into a round hole, personally.
Yeah, I mean, it feels empty, sort of, because it is, you know, yeah, okay, sure, you want to like the drama and the gameplay, but then at the end of the day, when somebody who it may end up crowned, who didn't feel, like, you don't feel like they were the best competitor, it feels like, oh, well, I don't know, somehow it, like, really didn't feel like a fair game, and I think because it's almost merging those two formats, like, you have the talent judging component, and then you also, on the other hand, have potentially this gameplay, which we haven't seen until just now, and so conflating these two different methods of reality television just sort of feel like a weird, I don't know, like, out-of-body experience.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is that if somebody like Trinity had done this and said, you know, it's not too early, it's the final 6, next week's the final 5, which is the last week before the finale, and the finale, usually there's no lip sync for your legacy, usually it's just the judges and then RuPaul picks. So this is probably my best time to eliminate somebody like Manila. If I want to do it right now, now's the time. So no, I don't think it was too early. If you're going to do it, now is the time. But I want whoever does it to win. Like, I don't want Naomi's decision to be used by somebody else. Like, what I feel like is going to happen is that Naomi did this big move. She knocked out Manila, all well and good. She's going to peter out, finish in fifth, fourth, or third place, and we're going to get a Trinity win at the end. Like, that's where I feel like the season's headed. So I'm hoping I'm wrong again, because I said this last week and then I was proven wrong. So hopefully I'm wrong again. But that's where I feel like it's headed now that Manila has been eliminated, because I felt like the only person who could really beat Trinity was Manila Luzon. And I didn't feel like that at the beginning of the season. But after about three or four episodes, I was like, oh my God, she is really good. Like every time she comes on the runway, she looks so freaking amazing. Until this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I'm just still, and I mean, again, I think the show, it's weird to say, honestly wanted this outcome. Not necessarily this outcome, but I mean, social media is a buzz right now with talk both good and bad. It was a legitimate gag-worthy moment. I mean, this is face crack of the freaking eon, let alone millennium, that this happened. And it might forever, because you know they're going to keep doing All-Stars in this format, it might forever change the way that certain queens could approach this gameplay. But I don't know, maybe I'm a bit biased because it happened to Manila. Like, of all queens, it had to happen to Manila. I wish, you know, it's just a queen that I personally really bought into. You know, it maybe if this had happened to Alaska at the final five of All-Stars 2, because I love Alaska, but I don't have as much personal investment in her, I would have been, you know, more, it would have been more snap worthy than gag worthy for yes. me. But here, just because
I would have been screaming, Mike.
Yeah.
Yes. If that happened to Alaska when she was like, I'll PayPal you $10,000. Just keep me out of the, I don't want to be eliminated. We all remember that episode, right? And I was screaming at them to eliminate Alaska for the competition, and they didn't. And I was like, oh, and that's where I thought, you know what? I guess they're not gonna play this way on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars.
Ugh, I'm just getting Shangela robbed by the jury vibes. Like that,
you know what?
That's how I feel.
Shangela was robbed again. Shangela was robbed of being the best robbed queen.
Shangela robbed by Manila.
I mean, that's the thing. That's the thing though as well. And I'm sure we'll talk about it more when we get into this episode, but I mean, at the end of the day, I think Jim Rosario said this well in the Rob Has a Podcast Patreon group. I mean, you could argue, like some people argued with the events of All-Stars 3, that Manila might have won Drag Race because of her popularity coming out of the season. In a show that aims to reward you with name recognition and, you know, bolstering your own persona within the community, I feel like Manila died a hero before she became the villain after a long, you know, a lot of
people. Well, I was so mad. Yeah, when All Stars 3 ended and Shangela didn't win, we were like with pitchforks going, gosh darn it, like where was, like she was a real winner. We wanted Shangela to win. It should have been Shangela. Like nobody even remembers that Trixie got the $100,000. And I'm really hoping that money is all done and spent right now, because she sure didn't earn it, as far as I'm concerned. Like, I don't know. Nobody, like, is she, does even anybody even remember Trixie Mattel?
Oh,
like,
that's,
where is she?
That is a bold
what
statement, Brent. People remember
Trixie
Mattel.
Oh, my God.
I
remember her. I'm just saying that Shangela is so far above Trixie Mattel right now that she is the real winner of All Stars. And I'm saying, as I am saying right now, that, Manila is the real winner of All Stars 4. I mean, unless Trinity wins. If Trinity wins, then I can accept the result. If anybody else wins, I'm like, I think this is probably pretty shady, but we'll see.
Yeah, I do want to take a second before we jump into the episode, because I think there has been some chatter. I've seen it across Reddit. This is sort of an opportunity, I think, for people to take a harder look at the Lip Sync for Your Legacy format. And as I said before, I really don't think it's going away because it's produced results like this. I think they're saying, great, this is bringing eyes to the show. Let's keep it going. But Liana, does this cause you to re-examine this idea and whether or not it works in this type of setting?
Well, okay. So first of all, from the producer's perspective, they want a great show that's going to bring a lot of viewers. It's going to cause a lot of buzz. And yeah, this format definitely does that. I think that this is just sort of paying the invoice for having this format for so long. I mean, I remember listening to y'all's podcast talking about this. Oh my gosh, we're going to see people be cutthroat. This is when I was just a little baby. And,
And, you know, now here we are talking about it 3 years later or whatever and thinking about, okay, crap, this actually did happen. Now what do we do? You know, how do we feel as a community? It's just sort of readdressing all of those initial fears or thoughts now that we've seen it play out in such a way. And honestly, I mean, I don't hate it necessarily, but I think it really does go back to Brent's initial point about if Naomi had owned it. If Naomi had been like, I'm sending her home because she is the top bitch here and I want to win, so I'm going to do it. I think that may have sat better with me. I think I still would have been upset, yeah. But I think it would have made more sense in the context of the narrative of the show.
Yeah, that's the thing. I understand where you're coming from, Mike, and that the editors specifically chose to like really go for the shock value of it all. But I think they could have, I'm so excited. I can't even talk. I think they could have attained that shock value and still gave us a lot of lead up where we see Manila pleading to Naomi, and Naomi in confessional to us is going, you know, I could do this right now. And like thinking like I could be the devil and do this right now. And of course I would be sitting at home going, okay, this is just, they're playing us right now. Like, this is
you would have fast forwarded past this segment. You would not have watched.
Yeah, exactly. I'd been like, okay, get it over with, girl. Like, thank you for providing us. Thank you for giving the editor something to work with, but we know you're not going to do it. This was like, you know, in BB19, whenever anybody talked about betraying Paul, I'm like, oh yeah, please. Like, girl, why? We know it's not going to happen. But if they would have given us that and then she would have done it, I would have been like, oh snap, like I can't believe it, she actually did it. But here I was just like, okay, like I get why you did it, but you didn't tell me why you did it. I think I know why you did it, but I wanted you to own your shit. Like it just felt a little empty to me. So I agree with your assessment, Mike, that I understood the move, but it did feel empty. And I take your point about a square peg fitting into a round hole. I guess they're going to try to continue to use this format because, as you say, it produces a great television show and you get interesting results. And frankly, I don't think that I wonder if RuPaul really cares who the winner of All Stars is. Do they really care who the winner of All Stars is? Do they really care who gets the $100,000 check at the end? I don't think they really do. I mean, I'm actually looking at the possibility that Monique Hart could be the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race. And I'm serious about that. I think she could win at this point with Manila out of the competition. I don't know. This stunned me. And so, like, I mean, well done on that front. It stunned me. But I did feel a little empty inside. And it's going to take me a while and the next episode to process how I feel.
So as we start off this episode, I do, on that note, really want to give kudos to the editors, because I feel like the best twist endings in cinema are ones where you are shocked by the outcome, but if you rewatch the film and you notice there are little clues and hints throughout that actually provide some, you know, some footprints to lead you to the ultimate destination. And in thinking back to the past couple of episodes, there were some breadcrumbs that were sort of put down that led us to this shocker elimination of Manila. Things like the last episode where Manila mentions that she's never been in the bottom. And, you know, the first time she does, maybe she'll be eliminated. You know, in this episode, in the opening, you know, after Monet sort of calls out Manila and Trinity as being the top two, Manila tries to defer things by being like, you're all in my competition. And she says, you don't know what next week's competition is. I could find myself in the bottom. Even if you want to draw a super obscure comparison here, there was a point in time where early on in the season, Naomi's fawning over Manila says, you're my lady bunny. Who died in this season in the fiction of RuPaul's Drag Race? Lady Bunny, so did Manila. So I just want to give like major kudos to the editors for being able to not only set up this shocker, but when you think about it, set up little foreshadowing moments throughout the season that have led up to what I think is going to be the climactic moment of the season. Liana, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, I actually wanted to say, so the after the elimination in the, you know, the very first segment that we see of all the episodes where they're talking about, oh, who did you send home, whatever, that I would like to call the foreshadowing segment, because now thinking about it, I feel like there's so many moments that indicate what potentially is going to happen later in the episode. And just like you mentioned, Mike, there were a number in this foreshadowing segment right after the elimination that set up potentially Manila going home. Exactly what you said about her potentially being the bottom two. Maybe I go home. You know, the talk about Manila and Trinity is the top two, but you never know. I mean, okay, sure. Maybe all of that stuff, we see the same thing every single episode. And just because of this episode, I'm like, oh, see, they definitely foreshadowed it. But I, you know, I think that this is going to be interesting to rewatch just to try to see how many of those you can kind of catch. But also, I feel like there are a number that kind of try to throw you off the scent. So maybe not. Yeah, I don't know. I definitely got that feeling.
All right, let's move into the next day here as I guess the crew took their own little paint rollers and whether they went vertically or horizontally is left to be said. But all the pictures of RuPaul are down and up are a numerous amount of photos of the one and only Judy Garland in honor of the challenge. And again, for the second episode in a row, RuPaul bringing some queer history into it. Is it valid queer history? I think that's a bit of a question mark. But, you know, Ru talks a bit about Judy Garland as this big gay icon and the possible connection between Judy Garland's funeral 50 years ago and the Stonewall riots. Brent, what's your personal history with Judy Garland? I guess I should ask, are you a friend of Dorothy's?
I am a friend of Dorothy's, and I am old enough to have lived in a time where you actually did say to people, or you have said to other people about other people, are they a friend of Dorothy's? Do you think she's a friend of Dorothy? Yeah, I've said that before. I love The Wizard of Oz. By the way, this is the 80th anniversary of The Wizard of Oz. Not that Judy Garland didn't do other things other than The Wizard of Oz, but I feel like that's where, as a gay man, I know her from the most. I'm also a big fan of The Wizard of Oz slot machines as well, and so I hear Dorothy's voice like every time I go to the casino. But yeah, I thought this was a fun way to go about this episode and really tie in Judy Garland into it. I mean, I know Rue is a huge fan of Judy. I'm a huge fan of Judy. I didn't know the thing about the Stonewall riots and coinciding with Judy Garland's funeral. I don't think they were trying to say that it happened because of Judy Garland's funeral. I think Rue was just noting that it happened around the same time. I think that's what they were trying to say.
I thought they said that it was because of.
Oh, well, I think maybe she said because of the effervescence that Judy Garland brought into our lives, in part, that's why the Stonewall riots happened.
it's really tough because on the one hand, I do understand, like, Rue can't go into the complicated history that, you know, I think sort of built up to the Stonewall riots. It was really a simmering pot. At the same time, causation does not necessarily mean correlation. You know, I don't think that people were like, man, this sucks about Judy Garland. Well, time to throw some stones. So I think it's been like a long-held myth, I believe, that those connections were happening. But I do think that, you know, both are big events in the LGBTQ community. So I understand how Rue tried to provide like the Cliff's Notes version of it, even though it might not have been the most accurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
All right. So for this challenge in honor of Judy, we get visits from these queens' best Judies. So we get Naomi's best Judy, Ricardo, Monique's best Judy, Danny, Monet's best Judy, Patty, Latrice's best Judy, Tim. And of course, I think Trinity and Manila have the most interesting ones, and that we have Trinity's boyfriend, Leo, and Manila's new husband, Michael. I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about all of these loved ones, all these Judies. Liana, tell me who stands out to you.
Okay, so I, you know, was writing this down, taking notes. I was like, okay, Ricardo friend, Danny friend. The notes I have for Patty are pale, milky little ginger. That's what I wrote down. Patty was fantastic. Apparently, it's a rule that all Patties on reality television that I watch must be outstanding because Patty was, for me, the most fun to watch.
Yeah, I think I saw Andy Heron tweet, Brent, Patty 2020. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, look, I the one that I liked the most actually was Leo, Trinity's boyfriend, because I remember the season 9 finale when Trinity had just finally found a man. She's like, I found a man, honey, and he's all man. And they pointed him out in the audience, and Rue actually talked to Leo out in the audience, and he was just so smoldering. And you could tell he used his straight boy voice because he was like, yeah, Rue, that's really great, you know? Like, yeah, I really, Trinity's really freaking awesome. Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, and I was like, oh, yes, daddy. So when they brought Leo on this time, I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be so fun. And he did not disappoint. I really thought he was going to be, like, a mess. I thought he wasn't going to have fun with it. But he had a blast. I love RuPaul, where she was like, you know what? every man has a little bit of sissy in him, because I think that if other people said that, they wouldn't be able to get away with it. But Ruth saying that, I was like, yes, bitch, that's what I've been trying to say this whole damn time. Like, I saw Joey freaking Lawrence pimping himself on Celebrity Big Brother in the bathroom for 3 flipping hours. And I tweeted out, he's such a sissy. Because that's exactly what he is. Okay, moving on.
I think the word you mean is shiny, because his head is so shiny. Just don't mean to correct you, but...
You need to reflect the bath signal off of it. He needs to be able to see it easily.
Yeah. The bat signal or the bath signal?
My bath needs me. I always love this challenge. And it's tough because I'm trying to figure out which format I like more, when they don't know the people or when they do. Because when you don't know the people, there are really great challenges, like when they made over the troops, or when, you know, Trinity won this challenge in her season for making over the crew, which she treated Leo very much like poor Rizzo, with using a whole roll of duct tape on him. But at the same time, I love this challenge, and I love, like, the All Stars 2 version when they had to make over a family member. There is something about these personal connections. You know, we get a walkthrough for the second time this season, basically, and it shows, just because not only do we have the time, but these are very close personal connections. Obviously, for a good, at least half of them, they have really leaned on each other in the most trying times, and so it really means a lot to make over these girls. We don't have as much of, like, the hot mess factor as we did with the social media moguls from season 10, which is the challenge that sent Monet home, but I mean, it was a nice moment to get sappy. And again, in the emotional roller coaster of this episode, I was happy that we got some time to really marinate in these relationships, because I do feel like you can also sort of judge a person's personality based on who they choose to hang around with. And you can sort of gauge who these queens are outside of the show, too, based on who they would choose as their best friend. Of course, with Valentina, I'm assuming she just would have brought a mirror, and that would have been very interesting.
Work.
Yeah, I do miss Valentina.
I think I probably prefer the hot mess factor of having to make over someone that you're meeting for the first time. Although, you know, I can't knock some of the emotional segments that we did get, like Latrice and Tim. I thought that that was, you know, for all of the annoyance I'm feeling towards Latrice, warranted or not, I thought that that was really nice to, you know, to see the two of them together. And I thought it was fun. But, you know, if I'm going to pick, I'm probably going to go for the hot mess factor of the unknowns. But
I take your point about the hot mess factor. However, I will say this, that I enjoy sometimes when they know the people, because here's the thing about winning RuPaul's Drag Race that I think a lot of people really don't pick up on, that if you can continually make RuPaul laugh when you're, like, not when you're on stage, not when she's waiting to be made to laugh, but at other points in time, you can just crack Ru up. I don't know if you're necessarily going to win the show, but I think it's going to give you a good shot to win the show. And you're also going to continually get opportunities with RuPaul, because you can tell, like, people like Jasmine Masters have been brought back like 3 times now because she just makes RuPaul laugh. And also somebody like Trinity, where RuPaul's going around during the walkthrough and she's like, well, how are you going to do that tuck? And Trinity just decides to make a gag out of it by, like, picking up all of her spray cans and bringing it over and getting all the tucking tape and say, we're going to use all this. We're going to use it all. And Ru is just cracking herself up because she is so here for, like, Trinity just, like, going out of her way to make her laugh. And so I feel like that maybe the hot mess factor is cool, but I like the fact that when they know each other, they have a little bit more to work with.
So let's talk about some of these walkthroughs that Ru does, because again, it's a little emotional. Even Ru gets emotional at one point, and Monique gets the contemplative moment that I think she's wanted for the past near 2 seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race, when Ru gets a bit real here and points out how every time Monique receives judgment, she sort of has a very dismissive face already, as to, like, assume, okay, you're already gonna criticize me. And, you know, Danny sort of talks about how he feels like she's putting a judgment on her vulnerability. And he does connect to Judy Garland, which, while I understand, it's a bit of a stretch. It'll be more of a stretch with Latrice later on. I can understand connection back to the theme, but Brent, what did you make of this sort of moment, this come to Jesus moment, as it were, for Monique here in the walkthrough?
I think that this is Monique's last chance in order to win All Stars, because RuPaul's not going to crown her if she continues to act like a bitch every freaking time she gets criticism. I think this is RuPaul going out of her way to say, you know what? you've done a lot better than I thought you were going to do. Like, I think there are people that thought that Monique would be eliminated like 7th, 8th, 6th, somewhere in there, and she's still here. So I think it's RuPaul saying, you know what? People like you. I think they were really surprised on season 10 when people liked Monique as much as we did. And then when they realized that the audience absolutely loves Monique, they brought her back for All Stars. And again, I think that she was maybe a filler queen for like the perceived front runners of Manila and maybe Latrice a little bit, and certainly Trinity and maybe Monet a little bit. I think that Monique was never really thought of as somebody who could win. But now, like RuPaul, I'm starting to think that Monique can win the game. But in order for her to do that, in order for her to get the title, she's going to have to learn how to keep a stiff upper lip when she gets criticism. And RuPaul does not like it when people are defensive with her. And Monique is like that every flipping time on the runway. And I really do think this is RuPaul trying to reach Monique and say, child, if you want to win, you're going to have to play the game with me and smile when we don't sing your praises every time. And I'm really hoping that Monique heard it.
Yeah, this thing with Monique having an attitude, you know, I guess I'd noticed it from time to time, but it hadn't really stood out to me. But when this conversation happened, it really was eye-opening. Not to get into the runway look. About why the judges maybe didn't like Monique the first time she was on the show. Because, Brent, what you were saying is, oh, the audience really liked her, but it seemed like there was some sort of mismatch with the judges and the critiques that they were giving her. And I think maybe that was part of it, that they just got this cold vibe from her and just felt like she was very dismissive. And so they really didn't like her in the same way that the audience members at home did. And so I think, you know, that was Rue sort of bridging this seeming disconnect between, look, you behave this way on the runway and we as judges maybe don't necessarily like it. Like, you have to get over that, girl.
It's so interesting how they sort of intersplice the numerous times that Monique made that face. And I'm sure she means, I don't know, she might mean nothing by it. It just might be a face that people make when they receive criticism. I'm recapping a season of Top Chef now where one contestant just sort of has this resting face like he's going to shit bricks every time somebody says something to him. And so they're very confused as to whether he's receiving something positively or negatively. And maybe Monique sort of falls into that category. But at least she'll be able to, I guess, look at that more, even if Rue's sort of deep diving into, like, you're doing this because you don't want to be vulnerable. And this is an opportunity where you're literally opening yourself up to criticism. I want to talk about Naomi here, because this was a journey for Naomi. And it's so interesting, again, that they keep putting out this thing of, like, Naomi's been safe, Naomi's been safe. Naomi says here, like, I don't like to take risks. You know, I don't want to look like a fool, because I don't know. Again, I look at, like, the first two episodes. I look at even, like, the Snatch Game, and she was taking risks, and she was putting herself out there. So, Liana, I'll admit, I don't know if I'm buying what they're trying to sell us here.
Well, I think that there were definitely a couple times, you know, during this season where we talked about, oh, maybe Naomi should have been in the top two. And so I almost kind of feel like this is what the judges and producers, that's the narrative that they've sort of crafted for Naomi, that, oh, she's just safe, 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 safe. When is she going to really break out of her shell? Even though, you know, we as the people at home watching it may have a different opinion. And so I think that this was just a continuation of what the producers have, I don't know, whatever they feel like Naomi is doing in a box.
Here's the thing. I do buy what they're selling us here, because I have felt that way about Naomi. Now, I have said before that I felt like that Naomi was starting to get on the winning track to a point where I thought that she could possibly win the title of All Stars. But I also said that I feel like she's really going to have to do something to wow us. And I feel like she got that during this episode. I think what RuPaul and the editors were trying to tell us was ringing true to me, because as I've said, that when Naomi came on the show, she said, I don't want to be seen as like this modelly posy girl with legs. And then she came out and gave us legs for days, every flipping episode. It never failed. No matter what she was wearing on the runway, it was always about her flipping legs. And I wanted her to do something more than that. And I feel like she was being safe. Like, it was pretty, but safe. It was well done, but safe. But there was never any wow moment. Like, oh my God, stunning. You blew everyone the fuck out of the water. It's not even a contest. You are the winner. which, by the way, is what happened this episode, finally. So I am actually buying what they're selling because I was never wowed by anything that Naomi did before until today. And so, yes, I will take it.
The third walkthrough that I want to talk about is what we talked about a bit before with Latrice and Tim. First off, Tim has minimal drag experience. He debuted himself as Alexis Knight back in 1994, only to be met with Latrice replying, "Good night, Alexis," which all I meant really made me laugh. This idea of Latrice just yelling that back at him and him just like going back out through the door like Grandpa Simpson.
But yes! Oh my God, I was thinking about Grandpa Simpson.
but there's some legitimate history here as well. And Manila will talk about it later as well with like Michael really helping her through the death of Sahara Davenport. But for those of you that don't remember from season 4, Latrice is an ex-con. She was incarcerated for breaking a drug charge that she had against her. And Tim tells this really uplifting story about the fact that, you know, Latrice's storage unit was sold without any of them knowing. So on the last day of furlough, when Latrice was temporarily out of prison, they just spent the whole day together stitching outfits and like, damn, get you a friend who can do that, because that is just incredibly supportive. And it shows that like it's a quarter century of a relationship. Mm-hmm. And you really sow something deep there. There's a reason why Tim is Latrice's best man at her wedding.
Yeah, this was the interaction that I really had the strongest personal emotional reaction to, just because to hear more details about Latrice's incarceration, which I actually, you know, I knew from season 4 that she had been incarcerated, but I didn't know some of the details. And sort of to hear Tim talk about that, and especially the stuff being sold, and to have a friend like him be able to have all the support out for Latrice that he did. I mean, you know, Latrice crying, Rue crying, I was almost crying. It just really was emotional. I was over Rue working in the Wizard of Oz references, though. I was super annoyed at that. But the actual interaction between Tim and Latrice was just really nice to see.
Yeah, this one felt the realest to me out of everybody. And obviously because there's history here. But it didn't feel like they were putting on airs or trying to give the editor something to work with. I did really feel like this was their story. And I really related to it.
So let's get into what happens on the main stage. And I want to start because we are not going to parse this out in terms of these performances. As per usual,
I don't even remember the performances.
Oh my God. Just a quick aside, because this just popped in my head. When they were doing the judging of the different the performances, they were like, "Well, we think you did really well. You think you did really bad." I was like, honestly, I noticed no difference between any of them.
No difference. None. No difference. None whatsoever.
So here's the thing. As is customary with these makeover challenges, they had to prepare a routine to, you know, a Judy Garland-esque song about "You're My Best Judy." They all even wore the same outfits, and they had to choreograph their own routine. But I thought it was a really nice editing touchstone initially to have, you know, they cut between all six of the performances, and there's even one final thing where each cut sort of goes for 2 seconds, so it all looks like it's part of one long phrase, but everyone's doing their own part. But when you are trying to individually judge those performances, it makes it immensely difficult if they're all coming across as uniform. So this was sort of a case of telling, not showing, from the judge's perspective, where like Michelle has to talk about like, "Oh, you had some great moves. Oh, you weren't really in sync." And you're sort of like, "I guess I have to take your word for it, because I can't really judge anything based on the 10 seconds combined I saw of you do something."
Yeah. And because they had edited them all together into one montage sequence-y thing, it was really hard to say, "Oh, okay, from this 3 seconds, I think so-and-so is doing well. Jump to the next 3 seconds, so-and-so is not doing well." This was definitely, like you said, this was a telling, not showing.
All right. Well, let's get into the runway here. This is really where, you know, the tops and the bottoms are made. And we're going to go, I know it's weird why they judge them in a different order than the order they walked down the runway in, but we'll go down the runway in order just to keep our formalities straight here. Let's start with Latrice Royale and the reemergence of Alexis Knight. Brent, they promptly said goodnight to Alexis once more, it seems, by putting Latrice back in the bottom. Deserved, in your opinion?
Alexis good night. Oh my God. This was terrible. This was terrible. I don't know what Latrice was thinking. She looks like a football player. She looks like a refrigerator. In fact, you know what she looks like? She looks like William Perry, the refrigerator, who was a football player from the Chicago Bears in the Super Bowl. Oh my God. What is up with the padding on this one? She looks like she's made of brick. I don't understand what was the feeling. And the titties, they look like they're made of stone. They look like you could like rock on them and they would hurt your hand or something. Okay, aside from that, there's no family resemblance. I'm not buying what Latrice is selling with fire and ice. I'm like, okay, yours is dark blue with iridescence and that's somewhat deep red. So you're trying to say fire and ice? Like, fire and ice to me would have been like red and white, or red and, you know, a shiny light blue or something. This was not fire and ice to me. That was like shoehorning fire and ice into this. The hair is a mess. The makeup doesn't even look the same. And I realize that they are not the same skin tone, but I have seen better. And you could have at least used the same cosmetics for the eyes. Like, this is so terrible to me. And the shoes. The shoes are just the plainest little black heels that I've ever seen on RuPaul's Drag Race. I am so disappointed.
Like, I own those pumps. That means that they're not good shoes for Drag Race. Okay, so first of all, from the onset, I just want to say the whole family resemblance thing. I was trying to figure out, Michelle means like pretty much identical, but with a little difference. That's what I was learning.
Yeah, that's pretty much what she vocalized with Trinity, right? She's like, yes. Oh, you basically should look exactly alike, except for several differences that don't make it feel like we just duplicated you.
Right. And so I took umbrage with some of their definitions. But I will say in this case, I saw the fire and ice, but I wanted a little bit more consistency. So if you're going to do the red and the blue, then if you're going to do like have the dress be the same silhouette, or why does the red dress have some sort of weird flowery pattern thing on it?
Yes.
And then like yours doesn't. So I think that was inconsistent. And then have the same hair or make it fire and ice typed hair. Like I didn't
red hair and white hair or blue hair. Like, give us something interesting. Again, Latrice, finally she got out of Liana just looking pretty but boring last week, and she won the flipping challenge. This week, she falls back into pretty but boring. Here comes another flipping evening gown that she's wore at a show. You know, sometime during the past 2 years, you know she's worn this gown sometime. Like, that's what I'm so irritated with Latrice. Why do you continually fall back into this safe zone that you feel like you can get away with? Because it's not wowing anybody. As Trinity said a couple episodes ago, it's the same tire drag she's been doing for the past 10 years.
Right. And then to talk about Alexis Knight's proportions quickly. I mean, my God, I just felt so bad. I was like, this looks like a fake cartoon character proportion-y thing. Like, I know that Latrice doesn't cinch, right? Didn't she say that? But Alexis needed to be cinched.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a disaster.
I'm looking at her, like, the picture we're finding on the RuPaul's Drag Race wiki. She's, like, at a 45-degree angle, and it's just, I don't know, it's like Jessica Rabbit-esque in terms of how much those boobs are sticking out, and as a result, it's making this weird shape pulling back. I mean, yeah, it sucks, as you said, Brent, coming off of doing so well last week, but this was far and away my least favorite of the week.
And shoulder pads. There's shoulder pads. The one thing I will say is, so when they were being judged, and then I think Rue said to Alexis, how does the comeback feel?
Yep.
I was really hoping for a joke there, and I didn't get one about comeback.
Yeah, be so like, oh, it's sticky, but I think I'm settled into it.
Exactly. Like Kim K felt the same way. Unfortunate.
Yeah, it's, I mean, just looking at this now, yeah, I think that when in doubt with these makeover challenges, like, samey is good. Like, I think when you try to go too obscure and you try to do, like, ooh, fire and ice, red and blue, that's almost never going to work. Because, as you said, I think the judges have very simplified rubrics when it comes to judging this thing. And I don't even understand the hair. They're both blonde. I guess that's the connector, but
not even the same shade of blonde.
Yeah, not even the same shade, not the same shape. Like, they're darker at the roots. Maybe that's the connection. It just looks super, super
not
distant.
Even the same roots.
Yeah, exactly. Not even the same roots.
I don't know. This looks like the two would be standing next to each other at the RuPaul's Drag Race cast photo, not actually being related
right.
to one another.
Yeah. That's a good way to describe it. Like, they are thematically similar, but the family resemblance isn't there.
All right, well, let's move on to Monique. You know what? It's been a while since we've had Monique have a face on herself. That seemed to be her thing she loved to do in season 10. Brent, we got it. And how? What did you have to think about Monique and Shanita Hart this week?
I loved this. Now, I'm having trouble deciding who I would have put in the top, because there's somebody to me who was clearly in the top, and then the other space, well, it shouldn't have belonged to Monet, I'll tell you that. Mm. But Monique was one of the people that I thought did a really great job. My goodness, this looks so well done. I mean, between the makeup and the hair and the proportions and the tights and the shoes with the symmetry and the mirroring of the bottom red part, mm-hmm. and the eyes being able to switch places. Everything about this was so fun and quirky, and everything that I want out of Monique Hart times two. Like, it was just so flipping great. This is exactly what it's what I expect from her, but yet she did it so well that I'm like, she went beyond my expectations. And I feel like this was such a home run. This was great. I loved every minute of this on the runway.
Yeah, I definitely co-sign that. The things that I think I liked the most were the eyelashes on the arm.
Yeah, really good touch.
And getting to do the blinking thing was really such a cool touch. And then also the pink tongue. Legging things, which that's what it was supposed to be, right? It was like mm-hmm. lips and a tongue. Yeah, I thought that was really cool. I loved this. I thought she did amazing.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Well, first of all, I didn't notice the pink tongue thing. And I also, like, I must have missed the part that the eyelashes are on the arms. Like, they did a good job of hiding that.
Yeah, it's really cool, because it's one of those things where, like, every part of the outfit makes sense. And I guess it works out in that she's trying to make a larger picture, so all the details count in that manner. But yeah, things just like, she holds the arm, parallel to the floor, and then turns it to make it blink, which I thought was a really cool effect.
So great. I mean, who thinks of something like that?
Yeah, this is just so much fun to look at. I mean, the red, the slanting red with the lips. I mean, it's also interesting because you could tell that Monique was also thinking about, like, okay, we also need to walk a certain way down the runway. How am I going to cut this in a way that can have it still look like a face from both angles? And so, you know, you get to this point where they switch eyes, and then they cross the stage. They cross eyes, as Carson says. I mean, this was a production, honey, as Monique has promised from the very beginning. This was just so delightful. It was weird. But it's a take on a paired challenge that I have not seen in quite some time. Instead of it saying, hey, you know, we'll sort of be in the same family in terms of outfits, this is, we work together to make an outfit. It's a really right. interesting way mm-hmm. of looking at it. And I had a lot of fun getting to look at this. I guess the reason why she wasn't in the top three was, apparently, again, their words, not ours. According to the judges, she had a very lackluster Judy song. And so that was the reason why, you know, they didn't necessarily make it into the top two. But from the runway alone, this was in my top two.
Yeah,
this was in my top two also. And I think that was the hardest part, was thinking about, oh, if this performance was such a big part of the judging criteria and then not really getting to see it, it also felt a little robbed-ish because, you know, Monique, who I thought deserved to be in the top, wasn't.
All right, let's move on here. So, say what you want to about whether or not Manila was robbed this episode. I can personally say, and I think at least Brent, you might agree with me on this, I think she deserved to at least be in the bottom this episode. I have loved Manila this entire season, but I totally agree with what the judges are saying. Like, I don't know where this came from. And it seems like the queens at least knew something was going to happen, because it seems like the majority of these outfits were pre-made, or maybe just touched up the day of, but otherwise they had prepared that there was going to be a paired challenge. So considering all the fantastic stuff, some borderline iconic stuff that Manila has put out earlier this season, I am just blanching at this idea of her coming out in this very, very, very simple card outfit. I love the concept of it, but my God, the execution did not live up to it whatsoever. And that saddens me to no end, Liana.
Yeah, I've had the exact same feeling. It just felt like the judges said something from Party City. Thing I liked the most was her description on the runway. It was, what's her husband's name? Michael. Michael's in diamonds because she's married, and I'm in clubs because I like to go clubbing. That was my favorite part because it was just so stupid and funny, but everything else was terrible.
I mean, like, somebody on Reddit said that this was the second time that Manila had served bedsheet realness. And I have to say, I agree. I don't know what the hell happened here. Like, this is terrible. How can she even, like, okay, don't even look at your competitors. Look in the mirror and put on the costume by yourself and say to yourself, does this look interesting? Does this look fun? Is this the best drag? Because as RuPaul always says, this is the height of drag. This is drag at its finest craft being done right now on the stage. You're doing it right now. Are you doing this when you wear an outfit like this? And I think the answer is clearly no. I mean, aside from the fact that there's no family resemblance, which, I mean, like, I don't even care about because the outfits are so flipping terrible. They swallow you up. There's no definition. There's no interesting points. I can't even tell where the waist is because there's nothing that separates the bosom from the legs. It's just so bad. I mean, this is the part in time where I was like, is she trying to throw this? Like, what is going on here? This is so flipping terrible. The bottom two this week was so obvious who the bottom two was. Seriously, for me, the bottom two was obvious. Number four's placement was exactly perfect, and I was having trouble between one, two, and three. But everything else, I knew who was in the bottom two. In fact, I think I hated Manila's outfit more than I hated Latrice's outfit, because Latrice actually gave me some definition and some glam and drag and fun stuff. But my God, when Liana, you said Party City, I mean, this looks like a bad Halloween costume that I would see someone wear who came to a party and didn't want to put in a lot of effort. I mean, what was she thinking?
Real bad. It's real bad. I guess. Well, okay. So what I will say is that, you know, we got to see a lot of her spending a lot of time with Michael. She even says that, I think, when she was leaving, was something along the lines of, maybe I spent too much time like hanging out with Michael. But still, she had this in her closet. I don't think she made it there. So I don't quite understand where this decision came from. I don't know. Maybe she did make it, but it's ugly.
It seems like I'm just astounded by just how blank it is. Again, Manila is so detail-oriented where it feels like no matter where you look on her outfits, there's something that catches your eye. I'm seeing so much white, and it's just, it's a canvas, and it feels like she's not painting upside down or right side up, and you have this little, like, Queen of Clubs thing and Queen of Hearts thing that is sort of thrown over the waist that just feels like it's sort of slapped together at the last minute. I totally
slapped together.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Brent, especially watching them walk down the runway. So boxy. No definition to it whatsoever. This is just so out of character for Manila, and I'm just astounded that it made its way out there. I don't know. Maybe it was a lapse in judgment, but I'm so stunned by so many things that happened with Manila this episode, but chief among them actually might have been her putting out this outfit. On the bright side, Michael looks beautiful in drag. I love that moment where they turned around and Michael saw himself as her in the mirror as Io wife, and he went crazy and I went crazy at the same time.
Yeah, he did look very, very cute. That was very fun. In fact, they had a couple of turnaround moments where I was like, wow, like, I am really impressed with the painting. I will say, across the board, I felt like the painting was really good. Like, there was nobody who looked broke down on the runway as far as their mug goes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, agreed.
Well, let's go from the bottom to the top here, and let's talk about someone who does stun in this episode for a number of reasons. Liana, what'd you think about Naomi and Extra Smalls?
So when, you know, Naomi said in the workroom that she was going to do boy drag, and then she comes out on the runway in what I would not consider boy drag, I was like, oh, that's too bad. And then when she took the wig off, and especially when she put the mustache on, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, this is so perfect. And especially coming off of the Cher challenge that we had had, I thought that it was like particularly timely, although I'm sure that, you know, obviously that wasn't planned by her. But yeah, I really loved it. And I thought that they both looked absolutely gorgeous. I thought that that this was a really great look. I thought she absolutely deserved to be in the top two. And, you know, I know it was a lot of legs still from Naomi with those like bright red pants. But I thought that this was an example of where she really used her legs in an interesting way to really like highlight, you know, just the elongation with the red and then to have the white jacket over it. I thought it was really gorgeous.
I mean, I've never been more stunned from Naomi Smalls than this episode. She looks so great. And I love both of them as a pair. They blew everyone the fuck out of the water. Mm-hmm. This was so flipping great. The family resemblance, the makeup, the painting. They are painted for the gods and they look like they were painted by the same god. Yep. They look so alike. Like, I really would buy the fact that they are related. They look like brother and sister. They look so amazing. And not only that, but Extra Smalls looks stunning on the runway. When RuPaul said the joke about season 12 is casting now, I'm like, you could go, girl. Like, I mean, if you've got any talent at all, you look amazing. I love the fact that she went out there as a girl, took the wig off, had a wig underneath, and did the mustache thing. And even though she's doing quote unquote boy drag, it still comes off as very fishy, very feminine, very voguing to me. I loved everything about this. This was the clear winner of the week for me. I've never been so happy for Naomi Smalls.
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to realize that I think just my favorite runways are the ones that tell stories, whether it's through a reveal or just through a narrative that you're evoking with the outfit you're wearing. And Naomi, I mean, I love the fact that, to your point, Liana, she's surprised by walking out there and actually taking off the wig, showing this bob, which... Actually, I should congratulate Naomi. I believe she's the first person in Drag Race history to win the makeover challenge twice. If you recall, I believe the one elimination challenge she won back in season 8 was the makeover challenge with, ironically enough, the Wizard of Oz theme challenge with the Little Women LA cast. So maybe it's just something about Judy. But she pulled out and she revealed that bob, and then she put on that mustache, which Manila gave to her, and hopefully she gave it back by the end as well, considering what she's about to do with Manila. But it's so interesting in that, you know, I think Naomi makes, again, very smart, very great point about how Sonny Bono, especially during the Sonny and Cher days, was sort of feminized, sort of androgynous. And so she even made little flares on things, like you mentioned, Liana, like the long pants that came off as bell bottoms, or even especially the cuff of the sleeves are flared almost to come off like a disco jumpsuit. So it's these things that hint at femininity, even though she's wearing a mustache and, you know, and a bob haircut, which is a little different than someone like Milk walking out as Boy RuPaul, which again had some more feminine elements to it. But that's more like I'm dressing like a man than Naomi sort of like straddling both, as it were. And I felt like, I don't know, this was just absolute home run for me between the looks, the fact this was a different take on the family resemblance between both playing the same person and then playing, you know, the pair that's infamously known for being around each other, and just the color matching of it all. It all worked for me on so many levels. Let's talk about someone who I think really took Michelle's definition of family resemblance and amped it up to 11. Bram, what did you think about Trinity and Indigo the Tuck?
Well, this is the other team that I really thought deserved to be in the top. I love Trinity here. It's my favorite phrase, but I would have had Trinity in the top over Monique with Naomi, because this outfit looks expensive. This looks so great. I love this outfit, and it does. Boy, they do look like they are from the same family. I see a resemblance here. Their makeup, although it's not exactly the same, it does feel like it's in the same county as each other. Their wig and their shape are matching, even though the shade of the hair is a little bit darker on Leo because of the fact that his skin tone is a little bit darker. Everything about the outfit is evoking the same look to me, but it's done in a different way. Like, the sleeves are more flared on Leo as opposed to Trinity, where it's more fitted. She's wearing pants where Trinity's wearing a skirt. But the shoes look interesting. I don't love the ankle straps. But aside from that, I am here for this outfit. And I would have had it in the top over Monique. Again, I'm not even judging the group challenges, the dancing, because I couldn't tell shit from that. So looking at this outfit alone, I would have had her in the top because it looks expensive. It looks like it has a great family resemblance. It's extremely well done and polished. And I would have given it the edge.
Yeah, so I think I was sort of just a little bit on the flip side, Brent, compared to you, where I think I liked, even though it was a little more rough around the edges, the creativity and a little bit more, I guess, unexpectedness or maybe expectedness since it's Monique with an eye on her. But Trinity's was, oh my God. I mean, yes, these outfits, completely co-signed, so expensive looking. I couldn't stop watching them walking the runway because I thought that they looked like the Palace of Versailles. As people, like, that's what I was getting. This
it's
elegant realness. Versace. So yeah, that was, gorgeous. And then the wigs, the way that they were styled, I mean, to get that and to get it to the way that, like, the curls of the wigs, to get it to set that way just takes so much talent. And I was blown away. I thought that they both looked absolutely gorgeous. And, I was shocked that, that they, you know, weren't in the top two. I mean, apart from Manila, I guess, or Monique, yeah, who am I talking about? Whatever.
I mean, I'll admit, I initially, when I saw this, was a little underwhelmed, but I'd only, well, it's because I had only looked at the at the patterns, and I'm like, okay, she just literally used the same fabric. This feels like a little too on the nose for me, but looking back and rewatching the episode and looking at the cut, this might make my top two as well, because I think Michelle voiced it perfectly that, like, yes, it is the same pattern, but it's two completely different outfits. You know, you see, like, the baggier sleeves on Leo, but it's very tight on Trinity. Obviously, they have different cuts. It's a skirt versus a pant. Like, they were able to mold these outfits in different ways where, yes, if you blur their eyes, they look the same. But if you really pay attention, there's so many different things going on. Even the hair, like you said, the curls are there, but the shades of blonde are different. Unlike Latrice and Alexis Knight, you know, it actually does look like it could be in the same family. So, I mean, Trinity, say what you want to about frontrunner Manila taking a stumble this week. Trinity has not really had many stumbles at all, and I think this just continues the streak.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
She's so good. Trinity is such a star. I'm so excited to see if she can pull this off. I really am.
Well, let's finish with someone who made its way, her way, into the top two for the third time, Monet Exchange with Patty Cash. Now, Monet was looking to redeem herself after she was eliminated trying to make over poor Tyler Oakley during season 10. I should also mention, by the way, not only was Naomi a previous makeover challenge winner, but I believe, so Trinity was a previous makeover challenge winner. I'm pretty sure Manila was a previous makeover challenge winner as well. So it was some pretty stiff competition, and I really commend Naomi for winning. But Monet was the one who got her true redemption here. Though I will admit, I think a lot of the clamor was helped by Patty, who from the brief glimpses we saw had the most performative experience of all the Judys. So they were able to, like, do a time step. And some would say that Patty even, I think, sold more than Monet did in terms of the cash of it all when it came to the Judy performance. But Brent, what did you think about the gold that Monet and Patty put out here?
Well, I take it we're all in agreement then that Monet did not belong in the top. Am I correct in saying that?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So we don't know where the hell this came from. We don't know what the fuck happened, because I don't know how this happened. I don't know how Monet Exchange ended up in the top, because to me, she wasn't even in the top three. She was a clear number four. Now, she wasn't in the bottom, okay? But she was a clear number four, and it's not even close. I think somebody on Reddit said that, has anybody pointed out that Patty's makeup looked like she jumped in a big bag of flour before she went out on the runway? Like,
hopefully it's flour.
I mean, my God, this looks cheap and tacky. Like, it does not look expensive. It looks cheap and tacky, and I don't see a family resemblance. The makeup isn't done the same. The hair, I'm going to give the hair credit. The hair does look like it's in the same county, but she's wearing tights, and she's not, and it just, This is the opposite of how I feel about Trinity and her partner's name. I can't remember what the fuck Trinity's name. What was his name?
Leo?
Leo, yeah, but I know his drag name.
Oh, what Indigo.
Indigo, thank you. Sorry. Yeah, this is the opposite how I feel, because these two, obviously, they're using the same fabric, but yet it doesn't feel like it's the same outfit. In fact, it doesn't feel like it's really related at all. I'm not buying what this is selling, and I feel like it looks cheap. The makeup doesn't look right to me, and I would have had it clearly as number four.
Yeah, so I completely agree. This was clearly a number four for me. I don't think I hated the outfits necessarily as much, like the, you know, the onesie versus the pant jumpsuit thing. That wasn't necessarily a problem for me, but it didn't stand out in any way. Like, it didn't stand out positively or negatively, at least the outfits. They're wearing those same black pumps that I own, so tisk tisk. What I will say, though, is Patty. What is Patty's drag name again? Petty Cash. Petty. Yes. Okay. Looks like that time Derek Barry tried to do different makeup and looks terrible. That's what I was getting. And also, just Patty has a stronger jaw in drag than Patty did as a boy. I don't even understand how that happened.
That's true.
Completely agree. She looks like a ghost. Oh my goodness. Clearly fourth place. Not bad enough to be in the bottom two, but definitely not good enough to be a winner. And I went back and I looked at the outfits from the last makeover challenge that Monet did. And honestly, they're a little different, but they're not all that different.
They're not all that different. Basically, she won a challenge with the same kind of outfit that she got eliminated for the last time.
Yeah, it's like slightly more polished and their hair is a little better.
I don't know. I disagree. I think, A, these outfits actually look alike rather than just being like, hey, they both look green. They actually have the same shoes. They actually have somewhat of a similar hair color. This was a low bar to clear, but I think she cleared it. Right. And maybe it's because of that they put her in the top two. I really do think that part of the reason she's in the top two is because they went gaga over the Judy performance. Like, Michelle called it brilliant. She said she got chills. I have to wonder if that, coupled with the fact that both Trinity and Monique did not get as high compliments, really put them in the top two here.
Yeah, that's what I have to believe, because what I have in my notes is the performance they loved. So that must have been what the judges saw. Obviously, we didn't see it, so we're judging based on what the outfits are. So I have to imagine that that's what set her apart. But I don't know. The outfit just doesn't stand out to me enough to make up the difference, right? If you're thinking, okay, it's a combination of the performance plus the runway looks. I still don't really see it, but I don't know. I wasn't there. Maybe they did an amazing Judy presentation. It's totally warranted.
Yeah, it's just tough. So I guess I'll give it to the judges here. By the way, I also give high marks to Patty and everyone else for shaving to get into drag. I wonder if production purposely told the Judies, please grow out some facial hair.
Right.
Unless Naomi's point about men hiding behind beards to, you know, hide their vulnerabilities is actually very true for all six of these people.
I'm buying your tinfoil hat theory, Mike.
Yeah, because like I think it's more of a stark contrast to be like, ooh, let's shave your mustache and your beard rather than somebody coming in automatically clean shaven. It's less of a stark transformation. By the way, as we segue away from the runway here, I do want to take some time to talk about yet another set of two guest judges who I really, really loved here. Frances Bean Cobain, daughter of the late Kurt Cobain and Courtney Love. And of course, Drag Race super fan and pretty much she's like rooted to the ground of Grey's Anatomy right now, Ellen Pompeo. Brent, did you have any thoughts about these two as guest judges?
Nothing individually, but I thought they worked really well as a pair. They seemed to have a great time on the show. They were into it. They were fun. They were engaged. They were intellectual about what they were talking about insofar as the drag. So I enjoyed them. And, you know, anybody who enjoys their time on Drag Race can lean into the curb as far as the jokes that Ruth throws out and play ball. I'm here for.
Yeah, I think that they were giving comments that I was listening and thinking, oh yeah, that's a good point. And I think that that's when I think somebody does a really good job as a judge, is that they give salient points that I agree with because they validate my own opinions. So I was very much here for them.
So we get into our deliberations here. Monet and Naomi are the top two, trying to determine between Latrilla. Ironically enough, the best Judys are up for elimination in the Judy Challenge. And I think, on the surface, a lot of us would pull a Brent, fast forward and say, okay, they're going to try to build up some drama here, but they're obviously going to send Latrice home. Our prediction about the pseudo-revolving door is going to be correct here. But there's an interesting turn that happens about halfway through here when Monique does bring up the point that this is a very unique combination of elements. Because on paper, you think that, again, from this report card standpoint, Latrice would obviously be the candidate. But if you
obviously like, it's not okay. I'm sorry to me. I didn't mean to stop you right there. But this was such weak sauce to me because I'm like, okay, there's somebody who has been in the bottom multiple times who has already been eliminated. I don't care that she won her way back to show y'all that she means business. She was eliminated. Okay, she's already been eliminated. That is not even in the same vicinity as Manila Luzon. I wanted them to just call a spade and say, you know, we could get rid of Manila. Like, this wasn't about Latrice. This is about Manila. Her.
Well, the interesting thing, though, is that Monique sort of brings up halfway through that these are two very unique people who are making these decisions, because Naomi was saved by Latrice, which Naomi was concerned about considering the relationship that Latrice built with Naomi off the road. And also the fact that Manila did want to send Monet home, which Monet made a big old stink about, even though we said that, like, it didn't necessarily matter at the end of the day.
Hypocrite.
Well, Liana, do you think any of that came into consideration? Because, again, both of these people will end up sending Manila home. Do you think any of that was actually in consideration when they made these decisions?
Honestly, I have no idea. I just go back to, there was a conversation that must have happened somewhere that we didn't see, because it makes me feel better about the eventual outcome of this episode. I will say I did start to feel a little bit of nervousness in the pit of my stomach, although I think that that happens every single episode. I think now I'm just trying to put more weight into it because of the actual outcome. Like, oh, see, you saw it coming. It's like, okay, no, really, you didn't. You just do this every week. So I don't know. I honestly just thought it was such a foregone conclusion that Latrice was going to go home. I was like half paying attention too when all of that stuff was going on. So I don't know if that logic and that reasoning really came into play. I don't know.
Brent, the other thing that you sort of mentioned beforehand was, I think you had sort of talked about Manila's pitches, particularly to Naomi and Monet, about sort of her, you know, it seemed like she was really going into like, hey, you know what? I'm a big threat and I could be sent home, but essentially my resume speaks for itself. And Monet seemed to vocalize some disagreement with that method of pitching. I guess in retrospect, do you think there was anything she could have done, anything she could have said to them to keep herself in the game?
I don't think so. I agree with Liana. Obviously, a conversation was had that we didn't get to see. I take issue with Monet, who I've had a little bit of problems with because I do feel like she's a little bit whiny in her confessionals. And I also feel like she's talking out of both sides of her mouth because she was so aghast over the fact that her report card was so much better than Latrice's. And as I recall, they had both been in the bottom once before at the time that Manila had pulled Monet's lipstick, but Monet had one time where she ended up in the top, so they considered that a little bit above Latrice, where in my eyes, I felt like they were both basically the same. So she was just going on and on about that. And then here, as I said, we're going to find out in the next episode, she actually also pulled Manila's lipstick. So, like, what do you mean, girl? Like, I mean, like, it's what's good for the goose isn't good for the gander. I mean, like, I just feel like, again, Monet's talking out of both sides of her mouth. She's such a hypocrite. I want her to own her shit. Just own your shit and I'll be happy. But neither one of them really did. I think that Manila didn't do herself any favors in talking to them. I think she could have made it a lot harder on them and said, you know, obviously, I deserve to be here. But part of the problem was that her opponent was Latrice. And I think she didn't want to say anything bad about the fact that Latrice should have been eliminated. Like, I never heard Manila say, well, Latrice obviously should be eliminated because she was eliminated before. Because Manila didn't think Latrice deserved to be eliminated before, so she couldn't say that. So I feel like her hands were a little bit tied. But again, I was annoyed with Monet. I felt incomplete and empty insofar as Naomi goes, insofar as her decision to eliminate Manila. But I'm hoping I get closure on the next episode. I hope they really address it. I really hope they own it and say, this is why I did it. Because I feel like that's why they did what they did. But if they hide behind something else, I'm really going to be mad. I'm really going to be mad.
So let's get into this lip sync here. I'm so happy that they picked a Judy Garland song, albeit I think it's a little one more off the beaten path, but seems like a live performance of Come Rain or Come Shine. I'll throw out a statement here, and Liana, let me know if you agree or disagree here. Monet gave a good cabaret performance. Naomi gave a great drag performance. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I guess I agree. I just thought that Naomi had so much energy and I just wanted to watch her move where even, I don't know, because even from a cabaret perspective, like I thought that Naomi, just watching her mouth movements were so much more precise compared to Monet's. And I thought that Monet, I don't know, I was underwhelmed. I was just watching Naomi the whole time. And, you know, Monet's whole thing with the ending with the umbrella with the glitter just was not enough to make up for all of the energy that Naomi had during the performance. I thought this was a slam dunk runaway for Naomi.
Yeah, I concur with that. It was a slam dunk for me as well. I thought Naomi killed it. I didn't really understand what Monet was doing. I heard some people on Reddit talk about the fact that they maybe, because she had also pulled Manila's lipstick, that she was intentionally throwing this lip sync. I do not believe that for a moment. If she was, she wouldn't have had the prop with the umbrella. And I think she did a good job, but not a great job. And Naomi was clearing away the winner. Congrats on your $10,000, girl.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that I think I understood where Monet was coming from. So that makes me feel like she didn't throw it either. I think she was trying to, again, embody this. You know, this is not exactly like a club banger that you would normally do these death drops and, you know, run around with. And so she thought, okay, I'm just going to like take it slow, just show my intention to the audience. And I think that would work if they were both doing it. But because Naomi had such a different take on it, that to your point, Liana, with so high energy, I think I saw Kevin O'Keefe tweet about this, that Naomi, to your point, Brent, early on when she said, like, I don't want to just rely on my body, she's relying on her body, but in different ways than we would expect when it comes to these lip syncs. In my opinion, yeah, she's produced two of the best lip syncs of the season, but she's been able to do these things, just move her body in so many different ways. And this one is from a really comical perspective where it's so almost manic, where she's bending over and she's reaching up on her tippy toes and then she's falling down. She's doing this now trademark move of scooching along the stage. That stage has been cleaned like three times now with Naomi's ass alone. But she's making everyone laugh so much and she's drawing everyone's attention to her just because there is so much great energy coming out of her.
Yes, and she's serving face for days. She's giving me lip sync and face for days when she's giving us these performances. I agree with you that, you know, she can rely on her body and that, you know, you don't want to rely on your body too much, as Michelle always says, but she relies on her body in a way that I have not seen before. Like, it's not about showing skin necessarily for her. It's about moving her body in such a way where I feel like she's happy on stage, and that happiness envelops me when I'm watching her. It just looks like she's having a great time, and she knows her body so well. And you can say, yeah, she's, you know, 22 years old or whatever. She's a young drag queen who, you know, it weighs like 120. And so, of course, she can move like that. Not necessarily. There's a lot of people on RuPaul's Drag Race who come on and weigh like 120 soaking wet and really can't move at all. But Naomi really knows how to do it. And she just gives a great performance every time that she's out there. In fact, I'm kind of bummed that she hasn't won more challenges, because I feel like we would have gotten to see more of this sort of energy from her. When I feel like she's at her best, and I really mistook her, because I felt for the longest time that Naomi Smalls was simply a look queen, because that's how she like portrays herself. It's all about voguing and posing and the legs and showing body, adi adi. But she is a performer. She is so great at stuff like this, and I'm so happy to see. And that's what makes me think she could win. Mm-hmm. And as I said at the start of the show, by God, I hope she does. Because this was the move to end all moves. We talk all the time on Survivor and Big Brother about big moves. And she made a big move. I don't want her to end up being eliminated next week. I want her to take it home. If you're going to make a move like this, you better win the season. Bring it home, Naomi.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And that's my hope as well, because I wonder if it's also a sign to the judges where, you know, she had said to Rue earlier, like, I'm afraid of sort of sticking my neck out. And Rue says, no, you need to take risks. She not only took a risk with her looks on her lip sync, but she took a big risk in eliminating Manila Luzon. Because there's a high chance that, to your point, Brent, even though there's one more, like, typical, quote-unquote, All-Stars elimination going on next week, she's essentially put herself in the position that Manila once was, where she's now the wild card, where people say, oh my God, if I end up in the bottom, and I'm, you know, if I end up in the bottom with Latrice, maybe Naomi will send me home. It doesn't necessarily matter how people do in the previous challenges. Naomi is going to eliminate her competition, and someone like Trinity especially should be shaking in her boots, considering that who is the other person who Monet said has a good spot to win this thing? That's her. So even though she lost, like,
I was going to just say really quickly, sorry, that Trinity should be thanking her lucky stars that Naomi was the one who decided to eliminate Manila, because I feel like that's Trinity's only competition. In fact, I don't think Trinity should even be threatened by Naomi, because yes, she is a little bit of a wild card now, but Naomi chose to make her move at exactly the right time. It's the final six. There's only one more episode left where Lip Sync for Your Legacy comes into play. Yes, technically, she would have an opportunity to eliminate her on the next show if Trinity ended up in the bottom and if Naomi ended up in the top. But if that's going to happen, that's going to happen. There's no, even if Naomi ends up in the bottom and Trinity ends up in the top, there's nothing really to be gained by Trinity eliminating Naomi at final five, because going into final four, it's all about whatever mechanic they're using to determine a winner at that point. So I feel like, again, Trinity has been done a big favor. I know she's going to be bitching up a storm on the next episode that Manila was eliminated. I'm thinking she probably is, but her path is much clearer now to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, based on the foreshadowing segment at the beginning of the episode, it was Manila and Trinity that were a clear top two. And now that Manila is no longer in the game, it's Trinity's to lose, I think. Yep. Yep. And it's really just going to be a matter of who joins her. And I would hope that the Naomi move, I know that, you know, Naomi cutting Manila, it's not skill at Drag Race in the normal sense, but it was her really sticking her neck out, jumping out of the car, running around the block, really trying to do something. And I almost kind of feel like she deserves a little bit of credit for that.
I don't know
if the judges will necessarily see it that way, and who knows if she would eventually, you know, end up in the final two. But I think it does mean something for her in the game.
Yeah, this is the point in time, just really quickly, when Alaska was up for elimination, and I was like, why doesn't somebody eliminate her? Like, why don't you get rid of her? I don't understand. She's going to win. If you want to win $100,000, you have to take her out. And they didn't do it. And of course, she went on to win the season. So I probably, like, I get the move. And like, now that I've had a day or two to calm down, I really, really get the move. I don't know how you feel, Mike. You said you were really upset at the end of the episode. I don't know if you're still really upset or if you are standing Naomi now, but I'm kind of at the standing Naomi point.
For me, it's sort of a thing of like, well, all right, if you got rid of the one that I like, you better go on and do something with it. So I'm sort of, okay. I sort of share the same attitude as you. I mean, it's, yeah. I've also sort of copped an attitude now of like, don't hate the player, hate the game, which, you know, has sort of gone around as well in terms of like, now I'm a little less high on the All-Stars format. But again, I love the television that this made. It was shocking, but I'm devastated that we had to lose Manila in this way. Speaking of which, let's talk a bit about her, because I do want to sort of put a punctuation mark on the end of this very dour sentence for Manila this episode. First off, I was simultaneously heartbreaking and uplifting to see Michael come comfort her mid-exit confessional. I'm glad that if she had to get eliminated, she at least had someone right there right then, because it's clear that I think Manila was shocked, as the rest of us were. She said, I can't really comprehend what's going on right now. So I'm happy she had that tether back to the real world, someone who meant so important in her life to really, you know, connect her back and make her at least feel like she had someone to come home to. I have a feeling I know what the answer is going to be, but let's do our usual thing of, was Manila Luzon's return appearance, her third appearance on RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars, in terms of her reputation, is it thumbs up, thumbs down or no change from your perspective. Liana, let's start with you.
Up, 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 up. Definitely. Because I think not only does she come away from the season looking amazing, having put together some fantastic looks, even her exit, this, you know, Rob G. Otis status is going to help her reputation. So I feel like she went in as, you know, Mike, you picked her first, somebody who was predicted to potentially do well, but I think even exceeded expectations from a number of people, those who thought she was going to do well and those who, you know, weren't maybe expecting all that much. So definitely. Up for me.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is one of these queens that we don't even need to ask the question.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, has she done herself a world of good? I mean, last I remembered about Naomi. Yeah. Manila Luzon, she had lost Drag Race to Raja on her season. Of course, she went on to do All Stars, but that was such a blip on the radar screen. I never even really considered that a part of her story. And when she came back, when I heard she was coming back, I was like, oh, that's cool. But it was so long ago that when you took her as the number one pick in our draft, I was like, I really thought you were putting your neck out there, because I didn't think that she could be taught new tricks. I thought she was an old dog, and I thought her drag was a little dated, and I wasn't that excited about it. But my God, was I wrong again. I was so wrong, because she went out here and wowed us. And this episode aside, she has continually wowed me each and every episode. Even at times where she's failed, she's been so personable and fun and light and funny, and just she's been so fun to be with on the show, and her drag has been gag worthy at times. Like, it's not easy to gag me, as Naomi Smalls discovered, because this is the only time where she ever has gagged me. But Manila has gagged me a couple of different times. It's not easy to continually outdo yourself over and over again, and I feel like Manila has done that. I mean, she, again, as I said, Shangela has now been robbed of being the most robbed queen on RuPaul's Drag Race, because Manila just came and stole it from her. And I'm hoping that she can run with this energy and really do something, because I just love Manila Luzon right now. And I'm really glad I got to rediscover her again.
I was really nervous when it comes to bringing these older seasons into these newer seasons. And Manila has vocalized as much, because like you said, Brent, I do feel like the Drag Race game has changed a bit in terms of both the show and the aesthetic, you know, since those early seasons when the show was back on Logo. And so even though I did take her first, I was really nervous about, you know, how Manila would transition over. And the first couple of episodes were a little tough. You know, I really liked what she did with the upside down painting, but that did not stick with the judges as much as some of this stuff that other people were doing. Second episode, she actually ends up in the bottom three because I think she really overthought the music challenge, you know, ends up not doing so well. But after that, my God, did she prove her star potential. You know, between the snatch game, between the Jersey Justice and the roast. Granted, she did luck out in there being three comedy challenges in a row, but I mean, she did not miss a step with runways to boot. I mean, she just made me fall in love with her aesthetic all over again. This combination of camp and weird and avant-garde, I mean, it's something that makes me really interested in drag. I'm admittedly someone who does not necessarily fall into the, like, pageant side of drag, where people look really put together and pretty. I want to see strange. I want to see outlandish. And Manila has always provided that. She provided some great lip syncs as well. I loved her How Will I Know that she won up against Trinity in the third week. And she just proved that she's also just a super nice person as well. I loved her in confessional. I love that we finally, and maybe this should have been a sign as well, that she finally mentioned Sahara in this episode, the late Sahara Davenport.
Yeah,
I'm glad they included that, because that's a big part of her story. And it sucks that of all that, she sort of went out on a really bad week when she also got, you know, she made her first misstep, really, and then got targeted for it because they knew she was going to go far had they not taken her out right here, right now. But I was so excited to have her back. And this makes me, you know, warm on the idea of possibly bringing back maybe other contestants for the third time, especially old school contestants, because I thought this was really important to introduce newer Drag Race fans to Manila Luzon, who is an icon in my point of view. And I totally agree with Brent. Add her to Shangela and Katya on the Mount Rushmore of All-Stars queens that should have won. Because I think that I would have loved to see her for the next couple of episodes, but we got 8 fantastic episodes of Manila Luzon, so I can't be too greedy.
Yep.
Next week, we are at our penultimate episode, and we're going back to comedy, it seems, or at least performative. We're doing a mockumentary, Sex and the City, which I never thought Sex and the City was a mockumentary, but I guess we're doing that. Liana, make a bold prediction here. Who's the queen who's not making the finale next week?
Well, I want to say Latrice, but we know how that worked out this week. But I think I'm going to stick with my guns. I think I'm going to say Latrice just because I can see the other ones all making the finale. And I don't think we're going to get another Manila Naomi thing. I'm going to go Latrice.
Yeah, I'm going to say Latrice as well. I think that she survived this week. And she was lucky to do so. But let's be real. She was in the bottom for a reason because she was the worst. If she ends up in the bottom with anybody other than Trinity, I do feel like that Latrice will be the one to go home. Because I do feel like that, and as I have talked about from the beginning, that what Reddit had said was that there is a little bit of an alliance or an agreement, or we don't know what exactly, between Monique and Monet and Naomi. I don't know if that holds any water, but, you know, I'm looking at what I'm looking at on paper, and I'm like, they're all still there. So they haven't eliminated each other yet. So I think Trinity's going to survive as long as she's not in the bottom. And if she does, I think she's got the clearest path to the end game. And Latrice has got the clearest path to go home next week.
Yeah, and I think the challenge might end up being really the determining factor here, because someone like Trinity, who might be up next, she might not have a chance of being in the bottom, because she's this. If we're talking about like a scripted television performance, like they do typically, she killed as Sister Mary Koontz, you know, back when she did this in the pilot challenge. Latrice, one of the big challenges that she won in season 4 was the infamous "Get These Nuts Away from My Face" sitcom challenge.
Yeah, but Max Munchik was just in love with Latrice. Like, I mean, like, I know that line was funny, and she was funny during that challenge. But she wasn't like, oh my God, funny. It was just like they were just tickled by it. Like, I was never as enthralled with Latrice's performance during that challenge as everybody else. I'm sorry. Match Munchik just had a hard-on for Latrice, and he had a hair up his ass about Sharon Needles. I will never get over that episode.
Well, I personally love the line. The fact that Rue even mentioned it on this episode. And yes. I'm going to be a contrarian here just to spice it up. I think Monique might go next week. I could see something where the preview seemed to allude to the fact that there might be a bit of an issue when it comes to her take on her character. Who knows? Maybe it could be a situation where she ends up in the bottom there and ends up getting sent home, which would suck because, again, I really enjoy her, and it seems like she's starting to open up after that conversation with Rue. We shall see. I can't believe we only have 2 weeks left, but with this game-changing thing of Manila going, it should be interesting from here on out. If you want to listen to any of this other stuff that we're covering in terms of reality TV, these two are working particularly hard on a crazy season.
Hard!
an insane season, I would say, of Celebrity Big Brother. Brent is at One Lucky Gay, spelled O-N-E. Liana is at Liana Boras, L-I-A-N-A-B-O-R-A-A-S. Be sure to check out all of their thoughts on only like a week and a half left of the season at this point. You can always follow me at @AMikeBloomType, or you can check out all the coverage I'm doing of Star Trek, Top Chef, Survivor, Celebrity Big Brother. It's all out there. Let us know your thoughts about the shocking outcome of this episode and who you think is going to take it all at the end. This was a tough episode to really parse our thoughts out on. So I want to thank you both for taking the time to talk through these extremely complicated feelings. This was so much fun to get into, and I cannot wait to see where the season is going to take us in its final 2 episodes. I just want to finish by congratulating Drag Race officially on its 10-year anniversary. It first aired on February 2nd, 2009, and what a 10 years it has been from coming from this little cult show into a landmark of reality television. Admittedly, I'm a bit later to the party than the two of you were with this show, but it has very quickly become one of my favorite shows to not only watch, but get to cover. So congratulations to 10 years for Rue and the crew. I cannot wait to see where this ship is heading between the rest of All Stars 4, Season 11, Season 12, and beyond. That's going to do it for this week on the RueCap. Thank you all so much for listening. You may sashay away. Bye!